great divide up on Custer Pass.
And coming soon to, well, not the Mackenzie Pass, they close that in the winter, but maybe the Santee Am Pass, singer-songwriter L.J. Booth. L.J., welcome to the Saturday Cafe.
Thank you.
Admittedly, I've been in Oregon for 25 years, but my recollection is that central Wisconsin is quite astonishingly flat. Where is Custer Pass?
Well, it is flat now, but in the history, one of the largest mountain ranges was in central Wisconsin. And, you know, it's like the Appalachians were once a great mountain. The ones in Wisconsin wore down. And so they're not there anymore. I'm talking about, like, maybe back in the 1950s was when this pass existed.
In the 1950s? It's worn down since then?
Well, you know, this was like, you know, the very pumicey rock. So it only took about 30 years, 40 years for it to finally wear down. And, yeah, now it's fairly flat there, but there, the Custer's Pass does exist, but it's more of kind of like a molehill.
Okay, I will accept that. Songwriter's license, I guess.
Well, you know, if you write a tall tale, you know, writing a Paul Bunyan tale, you got to stay with it.
All right.
You know, I moved from the Northwest and mountainous areas. We had Hindman Peak always on our horizon, and before that I grew up in India, and we always had the Himalayas on our horizon. So moving to Wisconsin, I heard these names of these different mountains in Wisconsin. When I came and saw them, it's kind of funny.
Rib Mountain and Bruce there. Mound?
What's that?
Rib Mountain and Bruce Mound?
Right, yeah, and then Rib Mountain has a ski resort on it called Granite Peaks. And for Northwest people to look at the granite peaks of Rib Mountain, it is quite humorous. And so there's actually, running through the area I live, Portage County, there's this little hill that divides the St. Lawrence Seaway from the Mississippi River. And one day I thought, well, this is technically a subcontinental divide, which would make this a pass. So that's where the Paul Bunyan's tale started.
Lovely. As a songwriter, you've gotten a lot of recognition in various competitions. Some fairly fine singer-songwriters are recording your music. I'm always curious about the process of songwriting. You know, how does it work for you? Where do the ideas come from more?
Well, I'm probably just as curious as you are about the songwriting, which I think is why it keeps coming. There's probably as many ways to write a song as there are songs. And I always, people ask me, you know, well, how does it happen? And I say, well, the best capacity and skill that you can have as a songwriter is to be ready, because you never know how it's going to come, but you just have to know that feeling and know that sensation or that image when it comes in, oh, and you got to be ready to sit down and go with it, or and then put in the blue-collar work later after the inspiration's over. But there's certainly no one single method for me. I certainly keep writing. I keep journals, and I keep playing instruments. And most of my songwriting comes off the instruments. I play guitar and I play piano, and I'm playing a little thing called a strum stick lately, which has been really great. And so I'll noodle, and while noodling, something will come through, and in terms of a neat chord or a mistake that sounds great, and you know, that'll just start the ear, and I just follow my ear. I don't have a deductive process. It's a generative process. One thing leads to the next, and I certainly couldn't tell you what's going to happen, but I can say that it's my ear likes certain things. There's ear candy, and you follow it, and all of a sudden you got a progression, and the next thing I know, I'll start singing a little melody to it, and then I'll spontaneously sing some words out, and if you sing the right words with the right passage, sometimes when you hear it and it's right, you're going to hear it. It's just going to resonate. Just like a really cool succession of chords sounds really cool to you. The right words with the right expression of music will resonate. And so sometimes I'll, you know, be a little more pragmatic, and I'll sit down and write some stuff and see what can work. But oftentimes I'll just start spouting. You know, I'll just run the ticker tape And nine times out of ten, something's going to come out of there. If you know, that's going to go, oh.
So when you teach songwriting, do you talk about this, or do you talk about the blue collar processes?
I talk about both because they're both essential in my, you know, and I think they're both really necessary. And most of the songwriters I know that I, you know, do workshops with, they, you know, everyone's got their own way of getting into the inspiration world and their way of staying in that kind of where you're not in complete control, where the song comes to you and you maybe put a lasso on it, but it runs you around a little bit, and you're wise to let it run you around. You're wise to try and rein it in sometimes, but it's definitely it's not a solo process. There's two energies at work, and if you for me, it works better if I know that there's two of us working at it.
Well, I'm kind of curious about some specific songs. Particular one, I guess, is Box Elder. As it said, I'm from Wisconsin originally, and the home farmyard that used to be all dug up gravel and ruts, since they've stopped running tractors through it, has become a box elder grove. What inspired you to write a song about something as common as the box elder tree?
Well, it's common, but, you know, it's also reviled. You know, the box elder has, there's a lot of, if you go into the local farmers co-op in my town, which is a small little burg, and you talk about box elders, well, they're going to want to come over and cut it down and poison the stump and get rid of it, because for a farmer, box elders is just really hard to get rid of. And they replicate really, really quickly. If you see a box elder tree and you look downwind, there's another, you know, 30 trees in its wake in the wind that are coming up, and you can see what, you know, what year they got planted. So they're, for a farmer and the most of the people that work the land here, they're really reviled. And so that was what happened with me. I have a box elder tree. I have a bunch of box elder trees on my land. And there was one down on the driveway. This is a true story, and which is kind of fun. It was in a really bad spot in one of the bends in my driveway, and my delivery guys hated it because it wreaked havoc on their vehicles coming up and down. So that's where it started. Was, you know, when I started thinking about box elder trees. Well, what's, you know, what is it they reviled for? They reviled because they're so strong in their ability to survive, and you know, and so that was part of the imagery of the song for me, was that there's a lot of things that we are afraid of because we see them as evasive and strong, but in fact, the box elder is a member of the maple family, and it's native. And a lot of naturalists in Wisconsin will tell you that it's an invasive, non-native tree, and it's not true. It's invasive, but it's native. And when I talk to a local guy at the Natural Resources School here about this particular tree, and he's very knowledgeable, quite the taxonomist, an amazing guy. And I asked him, I said, well, why is it these people say this is an invasive, not native? And he says, well, he says, I think people have a hard time understanding that something that's so invasive could be one of us. And that's kind of where the song got started.
The song is Box Elder, L.J. Booth on the Saturday Cafe. My guest today on the Saturday Cafe is L.J. Booth, and you're performing tonight a house concert up in Portland.
Right.
It's kind of off of our listening area, but let's give the phone number just in case. We've got word of mouth up there. 503-730-3189 is the contact for that. And then next weekend, you come to Eugene to Tsunami Books with Chris Kokish. And I think she's actually arranged for you and her to be on Fresh Tracks on the afternoon of Friday the 21st here in Eugene. And then the 22nd, Harmony House Concerts, a very fine series up in Sisters, Oregon. Katie Cavanaugh produces that. 541-548-2209 is their number.
I'm excited about coming out. That's one of my favorite parts of the country, and to go through there in the wintertime and do a series of shows, it's very exciting to me.
Your bio says you actually lived in Oregon for a while?
Yeah, I had a brother. I worked at Hatch Lumber in Portland for a while, and I had a brother that lived there for a while, and I spent a little time in Eugene, and I worked down at Crater Lake National Park for about 8 months at one time, and so I was, you know, bouncing around in my early 20s in Oregon quite a bit and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, it'll be good to have you back. I want to thank you for joining me on the Saturday Cafe today. We've got time for one more song before you go. What shall we play?
How about The Tide That Stays?
If I'm hearing this song correctly, it's talking about your daughter.
It is.
And this is the same daughter from Martha's Song and from Big Hourglass.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, I've been lucky enough to have a full life and to have be able to write about it. I mean, there aren't very many songs of mine besides Custer Pass and a few others that are humorous that are fictional. Most of them are just me being able to say thanks. And so this tune I wrote for my daughter when she moved to New York City because you know, I live in the Midwest, and she lived in Minneapolis for several years, and it was still only a four-hour drive. But when she moved to New York, it was, you know, you got to fly, or you got to drive a day and a half, and that's too far. So I had some verses in my head for through her lifetime, probably 20 years, and I'd written them down here and there. But I pulled it all together and finished it up and wrote it for her, and just in time for her to get married and for her to have her daughter. And so the cool thing about this song is that now when I see my granddaughter, who's 6 months old now, and see my daughter, you know, there's another circle is involved in the song for me and for her. And so it's gratifying.
L.J. Booth. He will be in Eugene at Tsunami Books next Friday the 21st, and Sisters at the Harmony House Concert Series on Saturday the 22nd. Thanks again.
Thank you, Frank.
Last night when I got home from work, tired and half dead, I stopped off at your doorway